This is St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Greg Montanew. It spanned less than 3 blocks at the intersection of Olive and Boyle, and it only lasted about 10 years. But in the 1950s and 60s, the arts and entertainment district known as Gaslight Square drew people from across the city and country, including Patricia Heller, Sam Clark, Martha Mahon, and St. Louis Public Radio's Robert Duffy. And in the minds of Jack Parker, Nancy Young, Bill Christman, and our own Dennis Owsley, Gaslight still burns brightly. They, along with Jeter Thompson, Mary Strauss, Norman Minnie, and Charlie Rose, share their stories with St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra, who produced this audio postcard as part of our year-long celebration of St. Louis's 250th birthday.
The first time I went to Gaslight Square, I was in awe.
You know, it was very exotic and exciting.
The streets were packed with people. It was all lit up.
There were restaurants.
A lot of good eating places, a lot of good jazz places.
Theater, art galleries.
To me, it was all brand new. I mean, places like the Gaslight Bar.
The conversations were so truly riveting.
It was very sophisticated.
People dressed up then.
People would generally put on a coat and tie, and women would wear dresses and heels and
gloves. I mean, women were dressed.
It kind of had a class to it.
And what I still remember so vividly is the feeling you got when you got to the square.
You just felt like it was where the excitement was in St. Louis. It was kind of the epicenter.
My heart tries.
The Crystal Palace was on the south side of Olive Street, sort of in the middle of the block between Boyle and Whittier.
Spring can really hang you up the most.
And the centrality of the location was really kind of a metaphor for its centrality to the square.
One felt very glamorous there. Mirrors behind the bar.
There was a cabaret theater in there.
I remember when Woody Allen would appear. He brought in Alan Arkin, Phyllis Diller, the Smothers Brothers, Lenny Bruce.
Gypsy Rose Lee, who lectured. She did not strip or anything.
I saw Barbara Streisand, and she's a beautiful voice.
Full of sweet promise.
And a little gawky.
Streisand was only 18 years old at the time. The artists that played at the Crystal Palace, they weren't stars yet. They were human beings, and so they walked the streets and got to know the people, and it was wonderful.
The main thing that I remember more than anything is everything was kind of about the music.
At one time, there were more musicians working there steadily every night than anywhere in the United States.
I think I was passing down Olive at night one time, and the crowd was, it was fantastic. And I said, wow, I'd like to play down here, you know?
You could listen to Dixieland.
Singleton Palmer's band.
Muggsy Sprecher.
Sammy Gardner.
It was a happy music. Everybody dug it.
There was the folk singing element at a place called the Laughing Buddha and some other coffee houses.
Bob Dylan apparently played in Gaslight Square more than once.
Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary.
God, I heard Judy Collins, bless her heart, you know.
Then they had vocalists like Jeannie Trevor and Cecil Clayton and Clea Bradford.
If there's a gleam in her eye each time she straightens your tie, beware, the lady's in love with you.
Oh, they had June Christie and then Marty Bronson.
And there was a group called the Quartet Trebian.
We did Afro-American music with the bossa novas, show tunes, original compositions, and a lot of jazz standards. I liked them all. Just to play and express yourself was, I think, the main thing.
I'm just glad I was able to experience that. You can say all you want about it. You had to be there. You had to be there.
Gaslight Square was one of the most integrated places you would come across in St. Louis.
A lot of times we forget that the area around Gaslight Square was predominantly an African-American community.
Not that it was necessarily you know, it was not easy for blacks.
Let me bring this to you. At the time that we started, they would not allow blacks into any of the clubs on Gaslight Square. So if you saw any blacks at all, they were walking the streets and looking in the windows.
It was the era. White people didn't want to go into a place where there were blacks.
But we were performing inside. Many nights my mother and father came down and looked in the window. Their little son was, you know, playing the piano. I'd go out and talk with him. They couldn't come in, you know.
I think the Gaslight Square came and went because that was its destiny.
It burst forth like the 4th of July, and then as things like that do, it all kind of began to fall apart.
The tenor of places changed a little bit.
It got too commercial.
These promoters would say, hey, there's money down there, and then they would open up these kind of cheaper places.
They removed some of the restrictions that they had on the clubs insofar as dress codes, the type of entertainment. They brought in go-go dancers.
Dancing girls in cages.
And the crowd kind of changed for the worse.
More people just rabble-rousing. You know, teenagers just coming to the square to hang out and get drunk and blah, 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 blah.
And then the city, I think, stopped patrolling.
The city didn't support Gaslight Square.
And there were racial factions.
Your car would be broken into.
There was a shooting and someone was killed.
Robberies, muggings, things like that.
The media started to portray Gaslight Square as a dangerous place. And so the area got a really bad name. People started to be afraid to be out.
And it really fell into ruin. It was heartbreaking to watch. I have wonderful but very bittersweet memories of Gaslight.